everyone. I'm Sam.
And I'm Sean.
And this is Key to the Case. Welcome back. We hope you all are having a wonderful start to the summer. And we know it's been a while since we put out an episode. So we're definitely glad to be back recording today. Special thanks to our listener, Pete, for suggesting today's case. It's one I never heard of. And in fact, I'm surprised it's not more well known. Before we get into it, I will warn you that there will be mention of animal death in this case. I won't be sharing any unnecessary details, but I did want to put that out there. I think for the first time, I can't remember another case where an animal was a murder victim as well. So we have multiple tragedies in this one case. All right, let's dive in. George Gibson was 47 years old at the time of his murder in 2000. George was a veterinary pathologist and researcher working for Procter & Gamble in the Cincinnati, Ohio area when he was murdered. George was a rather accomplished professional. He received his bachelor's degree from Brown University, the Ivy League university in Rhode Island. From there, he earned a veterinary medicine degree from Michigan State University. And after practicing for a while, he went back to school, this time in New York at Cornell University, where he received a doctorate in pathology. While at Cornell, George met Paige Smith. Now, she was in the midst of pursuing her PhD in veterinary clinical nutrition, so they had something in common from the outset. Friends of George and Paige described them as a remarkably solid duo, so it came as no surprise when they got married. I read that one friend said their lives were so intertwined that when you thought of George, you immediately also thought of Paige. And when you thought of Paige, you thought of George too. They really seemed to be this package deal. George and Paige both found jobs working for Procter & Gamble's Pharmaceutical Research Center in New York. From what I could find, their work appears to have involved evaluating drug safety. They worked for Procter & Gamble for about 10 years in New York until the company had a corporate restructuring that led to George and Paige being transferred to Procter & Gamble facilities in Ohio, where they are headquartered.
Well, that's pretty nice and lucky that they got transferred to the same location.
Right. They would have been faced with a difficult choice had they been transferred to different states. It's possible they had some say in that, or that they were at least able to request to go to the same area. But they did end up working at two different facilities in Ohio. In a quick background on Procter & Gamble, I'm sure many of you are familiar, but they are among the world's largest manufacturers of household, personal care, and hygiene products. Their reach is massive. It's actually wild how many brands they produce, like Crest, Dawn, Pampers, Charmin, Olay, Head & Shoulders, Tide, Gain. You get the point. These are all Procter & Gamble brands. Now, today, Procter & Gamble has long been out of the pet care market, but at the time of George's murder, they were still in it and selling those kinds of products as well. The move down to Ohio happened around 2 years before George's homicide, and George and Paige settled in a suburb outside of Cincinnati, specifically in a neighborhood in Westchester Township, which is the most populated township within Ohio. The house they chose had no shortage of space. It was more than 5,000 square feet in size and sat on 3 acres, despite it being just the two of them and their dogs. I think the size of the house in this case is relevant, and I'll explain why once we get into the details of the murder. During his time in New York and Ohio, George left an impression on his colleagues. He was regarded as a highly intelligent person with great compassion. He was seen as a good listener and personable. One of his coworkers explained to the Cincinnati Inquirer that one of the greatest lessons he learned from George was that to be truly successful involves helping other people be successful. As mentioned a moment ago, George and Paige had dogs. At the time of his murder, they had 3 Bernese Mountain Dogs. And George was known to treat their dogs like they were his children. So he loved spending time with them. He also loved hiking, baking bread, tending to his organic garden, woodworking, and working with local Boy Scouts. Based on what I just shared about George's love for dogs, and that extended to animals in general, it was a bit surprising to learn that at least some of his work at Procter & Gamble included animal testing. I couldn't find information on the extent of the testing, but this detail will resurface later on in the case.
Yeah, I don't know. I can't imagine with him being such an animal lover that the animal testing would entail anything nefarious or harmful. Do you suppose that just animal testing in general inherently does come with risks? Yeah, hopefully it wasn't anything too harmful to the test subjects.
I agree. And I just simply do not know all of the details here, but it was part of his job. On Thursday, June 22nd, 2000, George and Paige reported to work as usual. However, the day was set to unfold a bit differently than normal, as Paige was scheduled to fly to New York on a business trip. She spent the morning and early afternoon at work before leaving to prepare for her travels. Now, George, on the other hand, should have had a typical day, but didn't. And interestingly, the mystery of this case does not begin with his murder. George reportedly received a phone call that prompted him to leave work early around 3:40 p.m. He didn't mention to anyone where he was headed. I don't think he was necessarily in a position where he needed to tell anyone, especially when it was getting closer to the end of the workday. But therein lies the first mystery. The first big question: what caused George to leave work early? Apparently, there's no trace of this phone call they believe he received. And after he left work, police later learned that there was no financial activity. He didn't use a credit or debit card. He didn't withdraw money from his bank account. There was nothing. And at first, you might be thinking maybe he just wanted to cut out of work early. But he arrived home around 5:20 p.m. And we know that because a neighbor saw George come home at that time in his car, pull into his garage, and shut it behind him. The drive home would normally take 20 to 30 minutes. So if he drove straight home from work, he should have been there by 4:10. Even if we were to say the witnesses were off in their timing, which is possible, we'd have to believe they were both off, meaning the colleague and the neighbor in their timing in opposite directions, or one was really off. Regardless, there is a gap in time where George was unaccounted for, at least as far as anyone has shared. If he met up with someone, that would explain why there was no financial activity. But that person clearly withheld that for a reason. And this is not something police pieced together years later. The latest information I could find about this case indicated they still hadn't figured this out.
Maybe he was going to pick up something for Paige when she got back from her trip. You know, something to surprise her. You know, maybe that phone call was like, hey, your whatever's ready to come pick up. And, you know, maybe when he got there, he just paid with cash he already had. Some sort of gift.
I don't think that's a bad idea. I think regardless, there is a possibility that he paid cash if he went somewhere and bought something, or it could have been prepaid, whatever this was, if this is the case. The only point against that really is there was nothing in the house that we know of that seemed new or like a gift he would have been getting ready to give Paige. Once the police were able to look through the house and Paige looked through the house, nothing like that was reported on. But I don't think it rules it out. After George's neighbor watched him disappear into his house, only the killer knows what happened next. After arriving in New York later that night, Paige called the landline at the home she shared with George at around 9 p.m. Paige got no response. I can imagine that was a little unusual, but I think most people in that situation are going to try to rationalize that. Now, the next day, on Friday, Paige called the house at 6 a.m. trying to catch George before he left for work. But again, no one picked up. At 8 a.m., Paige called George at work and left a voicemail for him. It's clear she was trying to get in contact with him and by that point was getting worried. George never showed up for work that day, raising further concern. Paige called a couple of people later that morning. So she spoke with a colleague named Mary, and Mary was kind enough, understanding that Paige could not do this herself, to offer to drive over to their house. Paige told her, "Don't worry about it. You don't need to do that." Nevertheless, Mary and one other coworker drove to George and Paige's house. Around the same time, Paige had contacted one of their neighbors named Wallace, who had a key to their house. Wallace was retired and home that morning, so he said he would gladly go check on George. Wallace walked to the house, realized he forgot his key, so he had to return home to get the key. What's sort of interesting about that is reportedly the front door was unlocked, so I presume he didn't even check the front door. He could have been walking up the driveway only to realize that he forgot it before even getting to the door. By the time he returned to the house around 12:30 p.m., he was met by Mary, the other colleague, and the police. The colleagues had called the police to do a welfare check.
So did Paige know that her coworkers had called the police and brought them with them?
I don't think she knew about the police meeting up at the house, no. I don't even know with 100% certainty that she knew the colleagues were going to go over to the house. Could be a situation where she told them, don't worry about it, and they did it anyway. But she did know Wallace was going over there. I didn't get the impression that Paige asked them to call the police at that point. The police officer who first arrived found the front door unlocked, as mentioned, entered the home, and fairly quickly found George in what proved to be a gruesome scene. George and Paige lived in a two-story home, and George's badly wounded body was found in what was described as a tiny bathroom on the first floor of the home. There was no saving George. He had been brutally murdered. Sadly, the violence did not end there. One of their Bernese Mountain Dogs, Hugo, was found shot to death on the main floor of the house, while one of their other dogs, Capella, was found also shot to death in the basement. They actually had a third dog who had a litter of puppies, and that dog, as well as all of the puppies, were in the basement, but they had been spared. The police determined that the perpetrator had fired at the dogs 5 times. I want to talk about the dogs again later in the broader context of this case, but I just have to say we've covered cases where someone has been murdered with a dog in their home, or presumably abducted from their home with a dog or cat in it. And what we've seen, at least in those cases, is that the dog or multiple dogs are usually put in another room. We even covered the case a long time ago of Molly McCauley, who was walking her dogs when she was stabbed to death and they were unscathed. It adds this additional layer of evil, and we can get into why the killer may have done this later once we have the full picture, but the police made another notable find in the basement. It appeared the assailant gained entry into the home through a window in the basement recreation area. A window down there was broken. The police began to theorize that the killer broke into George's home before he got there and waited for him to show up. And that's where the size of the house could come into play. It could be a little easier for someone to hide out in a 5,000 square foot home with a basement and remain undetected for some time than in a smaller home. The police have shared that it looked as though George had been sitting at the dining room table reading the newspaper when he was surprised. Specifically, they said it looked like the killer sat down with George and spoke with him before executing him. How they arrived at the theory that George and his killer sat down and conversed is unclear. I presume it had to do with the positioning of the items in the kitchen and dining area. Like maybe it looked like two chairs were pulled out. I don't know. There are a few different ways I can see them coming up with that conclusion.
I'm assuming he was murdered that morning. He was supposed to go to work, but didn't make it since he was reading the newspaper. Were the police able to determine when his time of death was?
The newspaper he was reading, I actually believe, was from Thursday, or the newspaper that was out on the table. So it's believed that the murder happened after George arrived home from work, so the evening of the 22nd, not actually the morning. I imagine they were able, from his body, to estimate the time of death. And there were other clues as well, like, for example, the fact that he didn't answer Paige's phone call. I mean, that's not proof that something happened that night, but it certainly points in that direction, because we don't know of like any other plans he would have had or any reason he wouldn't have answered her phone call.
And what time was that at again? Was that around 9?
Yeah, she called around 9 p.m. What was clear from the scene was that this was a violent murder. It was established during the autopsy that George was shot 9 times with a small caliber gun. There were 7 shots to his head and 2 to his chest. Some sources say once in the chest and once in the neck, but most say 2 shots to the chest.
9 shots to one person is just crazy, but 7 of those being to the head is almost unbelievable. To me, right off the bat, this seems like a very personal crime. Like, this person was just irate with George for whatever reason.
Yeah, the shots to the head 7 times. I had to read that over and over. It's like, you truly can't process that. I mean, we don't know exactly how it played out. What could have happened is that this person shot him kind of in the neck and chest range, or maybe it was just twice in the chest, like some sources said. That probably would have knocked George down right away. And then what do? Stand over him and shoot him in the head 7 times? Yeah, I'm with you that this seems like someone who was very angry. Apart from the gunshot wounds, there was no evidence of additional physical trauma or an assault. George and Paige were not known to own firearms, so the perpetrator clearly came to the house prepared for this. A descriptor I came upon many times for George's murder was overkill. And it looked like George didn't die instantly. With him being in the bathroom, it seemed like he was trying to escape from the killer. So it could be that, again, theorizing here, like maybe he was shot in the chest, but he was able to run to the bathroom. Maybe he was already mid-run when that happened. Maybe the person pulled out the gun and he thought, I'm going to go hide in the bathroom. But the person caught up to him and that's where they shot him.
So the police weren't able to determine where George was shot?
I assume they know that, but they haven't explicitly said. We just know he was found in the tiny bathroom and it looked like he'd been spending time in the kitchen dining area when he got home. Like you suggested, the investigators believed there to be a lot of rage involved here and it seemed very personal. Shooting someone is not the most personal way to kill a person, but to shoot them 9 times and also shoot their dogs, that could indicate a certain closeness between George and his murderer. The police have suggested the person could have been seeking revenge or have just felt intense rage against George. But either way, their opinion is that he was targeted, that this was not a random murder. The fact that this happened inside his home already makes this less likely to be random, but of course it's not impossible. I mean, one way this could be random in the sense that George wasn't specifically targeted is if this were a burglary that turned to murder, but there is no evidence to support that. According to the investigators, it appeared that George's killer had looked through the house. It kind of appeared as though someone was looking for something, but according to Paige, there was nothing she could identify that was missing. Law enforcement does not believe that George was killed in order for the suspect to get something from him, to steal from him. Speaking of Paige, she was clearly worried about George the morning of the day he was found, but what happened to him was likely beyond her worst fears. When the police notified her of George's murder, she left New York as quickly as possible. Paige was faced with processing the sudden loss of not only her husband, but their two dogs as well. And on top of that, she was the closest person to George. So she could have really valuable information and insight into George and his life, but that also makes her of interest immediately. The spouse is always of interest in a murder like this. We know Paige's work travel overlapped with when George was killed, but could there have been a window in which she had the opportunity to kill him? The police have categorically said the answer to that is no. Paige was on a private plane that took off from an airport about 25 miles or 40 kilometers from their home by 6 p.m., making it seemingly impossible for her to have done this herself. Plus, there was a suspicious man seen on foot the day before George was found, so on the day he was most likely murdered. A neighbor heard repeated popping noises that evening, then saw a man outside, a man she had never seen before, which is not insignificant because George and Paige lived on a cul-de-sac with only a handful of homes on it. So it was probably not every day that a random man would be walking near their home, especially after hearing strange popping noises. It's usually explained that neighbors, plural, saw this man. And while it's unclear exactly how many people saw him, he was on foot, which would make sense if this was the killer because no one saw an unknown car parked at George's home. So the killer likely parked a distance away and walked to their house or got dropped off. This person was described as a white male with a tan complexion, 35 to 50 years old, 5'7 to 5'10, 130 to 150 pounds, having dark hair with some gray in it and wearing a ball cap. Not the most specific description we've had by any means, but I get it. When you only see someone for a handful of seconds, it can be hard to give a really precise description about someone. Literally, as I was researching this part of the case, I was sitting in our living room and we have this big window in our living room. You can just see right out and people would occasionally pass by walking their dog just on a walk or whatever. And I thought about it. I was thinking, okay, could I describe the last person who walked by? And it would have been really hard. It was easier to envision being able to like see a row of pictures and point to which person I saw, but to actually describe them to the point where something like a sketch could be developed is really difficult to do. Plus, this description could have been coming from multiple people, but the police felt they had enough information for a composite sketch, so they developed and distributed it pretty early on in the investigation. It's a fairly generic sketch like they tend to be, but we will share it on our Instagram page at Key to the Case Podcast. So you can check it out and be the judge of it yourself. To date, this individual has not been identified. It didn't look like anyone George knew. If this person was in the area that day innocently and had nothing to do with George's murder, he did not come forward to reveal himself. That is, if he heard about George's murder. His case was pretty big news when it happened because his murder was highly unusual for the suburb. It was the only homicide reported in 2000 in Westchester and just one of four at that time since the 1970s in a community known for its low crime rates. So I think it's likely that most people in the area heard about George's murder. It's always possible that this man, whoever he is, did not. But I'm definitely leaning towards the possibility that this man was George's killer. If Paige had any involvement in George's murder, it would have to be a situation where she got someone to do this. The police have investigated this possibility It's certainly not unheard of for someone to want to be out of town when they set something up like this. Being in another state is a rock solid alibi. What we don't know is how often Paige traveled for work. This very well could have been a common occurrence. You travel for work all the time, so your absence in a case like this would not be that meaningful. Where it becomes more interesting in this case and similar cases is if the person of interest rarely travels, even though it could be a coincidence, could also not be.
Or, you know, like we were saying earlier, it appears as though this person knew George personally. So they may have had some insight on when Paige was leaving for work and could have used that to their advantage if they didn't want her caught up in what they were doing.
Yeah. Let's talk about that. So in the event that this killer didn't know that Paige was traveling, which is possible, I would presume if George was truly targeted that they knew he had a wife. So did they account for the possibility that she could have been home at the same time as him? And were they prepared to kill her as well? And this is where I can see the phone call coming in. I know we don't know who called him, but was that an attempt to get George to come home early when they thought they could ensure Paige would not be there? And then for some reason, he didn't really go home as early as they expected. So like you said, this person either knew Paige would be gone that evening, had some inside knowledge because they were close to him, didn't know if she would be there and didn't care, or perhaps didn't know there was a wife in the picture at all. But I do think there's a scenario here where the person who called him at work is involved in this too, and that they got him to leave work early and kind of set this up. It could be that the caller and the killer are one and the same, though, too. That's a possibility. And even if this person was close to George, like how many people would have known that Paige would be gone for work on this random Thursday?
Maybe it was a coworker of both of theirs who was aware of this work trip.
Could be. Yeah. And that could even be like someone who worked more closely with George and just he mentioned at work, oh, like Paige is going out to New York for this work trip because they did work at different facilities. So I don't know how much overlap there was between the people they worked with regularly.
Yeah, it even could have been something really simple like, hey, what are you and Paige doing this weekend? And that's when he would have said, she's going out of town.
And maybe I was just intertwining my own personal experience here, like I said, with you, where I don't tell everybody when you're going out of town. It's definitely just something that's mentioned in passing, but you also, again, travel so much that it's like, I don't really need to give everyone the play-by-play, but it is something that on any given week when you are traveling, like it's probably one person at least in my life, who knows? I mean, other people in your life as well. The police spoke with George and Paige's friends and family. This included a trip to upstate New York. The impression they got and what they learned was that these people did not think Paige could have been behind this. Going back to their relationship dynamic we talked about up front, everyone viewed them as this tight-knit, strong couple. The Cincinnati Inquirer reported that one of George and Paige's friends, Peter, this was an old college friend of George's, was questioned by the police. According to him, they were eager to get his perspective on George and Paige's marriage, as well as his opinion on her potential involvement. He said, quote, all I could say was, there's no way in hell she could have ever shot those dogs. Maybe she could have shot her husband, but not the dogs, end quote. And it's an odd comment. If you ask me, it's a weird thing to say, but he has a point in the sense that in the theory that Paige hired someone to do this, she probably wouldn't have been okay with the dogs being killed too.
I mean, in my opinion, if you're going to the lengths of hiring someone to kill your husband for you, you're not really in a rational mindset to where you'd say, no, the dogs are off limits. just kill my husband.
Which I agree, but think about all the cases too we've covered where the animals are spared. What's the reason in that case?
Yeah, I just had a dark thought. You know, if, and I'm not saying I think she did have anything to do with it, but if she did in this theoretical sense, then yeah, killing the dogs would likely put the sin off of her. One of his closest friends corroborates that.
Right. He's saying there's no way she would have had those dogs killed. So yeah, and I think that's kind of the first thought when you hear that. You have these two people, they loved their dogs. Apparently, it is hard to envision Paige being okay with that in this scenario. The same friend said that George had emailed him shortly before his death about an issue he was having with an employee. Police looked into the matter, but the lead ultimately went nowhere. 2 months after George's murder, Paige ceased direct conversation with the police, requesting that all questions be directed to her attorney first. The investigators were disappointed by this because she had been very cooperative before then, but I think Paige did exactly what she should do, especially knowing how focused the police were on her and how they were questioning everyone about her. I'm surprised she waited that long to make that decision. And it's not that she cut off all communication with the investigators at that time, but she wanted her attorney to be involved in any questioning. This was around the same time that some shocking information came out about George. I've buried quite the lead here, but I didn't want to bring it up too early and have it become the whole focal point of the case. In August 2000, 2 months after George's murder, a woman called a local TV station, presumably after she saw a segment about George's murder, to indicate she had been having a phone relationship with a Procter & Gamble researcher from Westchester who she believed to be George. Why she called the station instead of the police, I don't know. She may have been too scared to go directly to the police. The station provided this information to law enforcement immediately. However, the police had trouble tracking down this woman, so they put this information out publicly with the hope that she would come forward and reveal herself or someone would know who this woman was. It's a little murky on if they determined who that specific woman was, but investigators later learned that George had, in fact, been using a phone dating service to meet women. One woman he met in late 1999 remained in regular contact with him, and she told police that they spoke frequently by phone, dined together, and occasionally visited Mount Airy Forest. She was not considered a suspect in George's case. Another woman George had communicated with took a polygraph exam administered by the Westchester Township Police. She reportedly passed.
So was this news to Paige after this woman came forward and kind of exposed George a little bit?
Paige said she knew nothing of it. Yeah, this was all new information to her. And going back to hiring an attorney, I wonder if this information coming out, her learning this, could have propelled that forward even faster.
So I know she'd been cleared by the police before, but did this new information kind of rekindle that interest into her?
I don't think they were off of Paige yet when they learned this. And to clarify, they have said she couldn't have pulled the trigger. She couldn't have killed him herself. But I don't know that she's been cleared altogether from any involvement. I don't know that anybody really has been cleared. Paige hasn't said too much publicly, but I did find one comment where she said about the matter that this sort of behavior didn't sound like George, but that she guessed it was possible. Others have weighed in on this too. That friend Peter we spoke about couldn't believe it, saying that he saw George and Paige as very much in love. One of their neighbors, Anne, who was actually the wife of Wallace, the neighbor Paige asked to check on George, told the Cincinnati Inquirer that she didn't buy into this idea that George was fooling around on Paige. She believed she was a good judge of character, but admitted that she could have missed this. She went on to say that he'd have to be such a two-faced person to do this. I fear she missed this one with this aspect of George's life. I don't think police would put this information out there without being certain that George was participating in this. George's sister was in disbelief too, saying that it was nearly impossible and that George was very straight-laced and that he and Paige had a very tight marriage. If we go back just for a moment to the theory that Paige was behind her husband's murder, in that theory, it's possible that she learned that George was cheating and this was her response. Obviously, kind of like we talked about before, that's an extreme response and most people would just get a divorce, but it is a potential reason or motive to consider. If you're someone who considers murder, of course you wouldn't get a divorce. That would just make too much sense. Like, it's kind of like we were talking about before. We're not talking about a rational mind here. And to be clear, she said she knew nothing about this, and I'm not aware of any evidence that that's untrue. But all of this raises an important question. Could George's murder have been related to the dating service he was using? And I don't want to, but we could go down that path for a while. In that, was he seeing someone who didn't know he was married? They found out and retaliated. Or was he seeing someone who was in a relationship? That person's partner found out and sought revenge. This dating service situation just opens up all of these different possibilities. And interestingly, the police have indicated that evidence recovered at the scene points to George's murder being related to the dating service, but they haven't clarified what that means or what that evidence was. With the possibilities I mentioned with someone seeking revenge, that would align with the overkill. Whereas if this were a murder for hire, the scene and how many times George was shot, those factors don't align well with that. You don't see a lot of overkill in murder for hire cases. The theory that George's murder was connected to his extramarital affairs is not the only one. A theory that Paige, as well as George's sister, has suggested is that George's murder was a case of mistaken identity where the hitman went to the wrong house. They may have come up with this theory on their own, but it also may have spawned from information the neighbors, Wallace and Anne, shared with police and presumably with Paige. Roughly a month before George was killed, another neighbor, embroiled in a bitter divorce, began receiving threatening phone calls and voicemails from his estranged wife. The voicemails were given to the police for review, and the ex-wife allegedly asserted that she had a friend who could get rid of anyone she requested. At first, when I heard about this mistaken identity theory, I thought, that must be really unlikely. Like, what are the odds of that in this cul-de-sac? But then when you learn that someone living near George was being threatened, it carries a little more weight. I still think the hired hit situation doesn't align with the crime scene, but I suppose this person could have been following directions from whoever asked them to do this in this theory. You would think that that person would know if their future victim had three big dogs. Maybe not, or maybe this neighbor was the target and he just so happened to have three big dogs too. I don't know. It just feels like there would be indicators that they were at the wrong house. This mistaken identity theory is certainly worth taking seriously, but the investigators didn't find any specific evidence to support it. This theory seems to be where some people landed in George's life, like Paige and George's sister. But George's sister also shared that George had helped at least one woman escape an abusive relationship. So that was another possibility that maybe led to this, but there's not much information out there on that one. There is one last theory to discuss, and this brings us back to the animal testing I mentioned at the beginning that was part of George's work. Some of this work at Procter & Gamble actually prompted protests. Animal rights activists were very much against this, so that was an angle that had to be explored. Could this have been retribution for the work he was involved in? There are a lot of problems with this theory, though, besides the fact that there's no evidence of this sort of connection. For starters, Procter & Gamble had announced a year before George's murder that they were largely scaling back on their animal testing practices. And I'm sure you're already thinking this, but it is hard, almost impossible, to conceive of someone from an animal advocacy group killing a dog at all, let alone two dogs. And I know it's crazy to kill a person, but if it all originated from animal testing, it just does not make sense. I don't know that this theory has been fully ruled out. It probably can't be until it's known who killed George, but it's one of the least probable theories, it seems.
Yeah, it doesn't seem too likely to me. I suppose unless the two dogs that did get killed, maybe they were trying to protect George and this person in order to get out of there uninjured had to kill them. But didn't you say that this person shot one of the dogs 5 times?
I think it was between the two dogs they had been shot 5 okay. times total.
Okay. Yeah, I guess it could have been self-defense against the dogs, but you certainly didn't need to shoot them that many times, in my opinion. I mean, I guess at the best you could have tried to slow them down.
So is that what you're thinking is most likely? That was kind of my initial thought, that these dogs were in the way of this killer. For all we know, that these are big dogs.
Yeah,
they could have been jumping on this person.
Yeah. I mean, maybe that's why the dog that just had the litter of puppies wasn't killed. Maybe, I don't know, she didn't have the energy.
Yeah.
You know, she didn't have the energy to try to protect George. But yeah, I think I'm in the boat of this person killed the dogs because they were likely in the way of the murder of George.
And the other dog with the puppies wouldn't have been as big of a threat as the other two. See, that was my first thought, but I'm not totally set on it. I do think there is a possibility that this was part of George's murder because one dog was in the basement. And if this person broke in before George got home, they really couldn't fend off these dogs without killing them. It seems like this dog was killed pretty immediately in the basement when the person broke in. If this killer killed the dogs before George got home, that throws me off because the police said it looked like George sat down to read the newspaper when he was startled. And the dog owners, or even if you don't have a dog, you know, when you've been at work all day or you've been gone for a while, you usually come back home and greet your dogs or let them out to go to the bathroom right away, especially if you've been gone for 8+ hours. It's hard to picture George just sitting down to read the newspaper without seeing his dogs. I suppose the newspaper aspect could be a red herring. Maybe he was reading the newspaper that morning before work and just left it open on the kitchen table where he left off. And this is why I wanted to come back to this at the end, because I feel like it's one of those topics you can take in so many different directions. Close to a year after George's murder, Paige sold the home she shared with George. I presume it was exceedingly difficult to continue to live in the home where your husband and dogs were murdered. She moved to a different part of Cincinnati before moving back to New York, where she and George previously lived. Paige continued to work for Procter & Gamble, so she must have transferred back, but it seems like she had more connections in New York than Ohio, so that was probably a more comfortable place to be after George's homicide. You might be wondering if there's any sort of DNA or fingerprint evidence collected from the scene, and the only mention of this I could find is that there was a single unidentified fingerprint collected. If there's been any work done recently to take advantage of the advances in technology, that has not been reported on. Man, I hope this is a case where they're not giving the play-by-play to the media and that there is more going on in the background and that maybe there will be a really big development soon. I would love to see that in this case. If you have information about George's murder, please contact the Westchester Police at 513-777-2231. Tips can also be reported anonymously through the department's website. Definitely chime in on this case. Let us know what you think. You can do so by dropping a comment on Spotify. You can comment on our Instagram, Key to the Case Podcast, or you can send us an email at keytothecase@gmail.com. Thank you all so much for tuning into this case. That is all for now, but we'll be back soon with a new case. Bye.
Bye.